every life transformed by medicine is a story. One that often begins with an investigator with a fresh idea. An idea that turns into a study and that ultimately advances patient care. Only innovation can truly help our patients live longer, healthier lives. Hello, my name is Dr. Kira O'Sullivan, and I am a breast medical oncologist at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. This is the monthly podcast of ACRU, the Cancer Research Network, whose mission is to establish the next level study for cancer research across the major disease groups. In this podcast, we want to hear the stories behind the innovative ideas and listen to the unique journeys of our researchers. Listen in as we explore the people and ideas of today's leading translational research. We have three guests today on our podcast, all of whom are past and present senior colleagues of mine here at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Each of our guests has made a unique contribution to the development of the ACRU Cancer Research Network. I'm personally very curious to learn more about the original mission and vision of the ACRU from the time of inception to the present day, as well as the goals and potential growth opportunities for ACRU in the coming years. Dr. Stephen Alberts is a professor of oncology at Mayo Clinic with a specific focus in gastrointestinal cancers. He serves as the chair of the Division of Medical Oncology and Deputy Director for Clinical Research in the Mayo Clinic Cancer Center. Dr. Jan Buckner is also a professor of oncology at Mayo Clinic and a physician coach at the Executive Coaching Program Leadership and Workforce Development Team. He formerly served as the chair of the Department of Oncology here at Mayo Clinic, as well as chair of the Enterprise Mayo Clinic Cancer Center. And finally, Dr. Charles Laprinzi is a professor of oncology at Mayo Clinic and a co-director of the Mayo Clinic Cancer Center Prevention and Control Program. Over the past decades, his primary research has focused on cancer-related symptom control, and he's been intimately involved with over 100 trials related to this topic. So it's really great to have the opportunity to talk to you all today. As a relatively recent recruit to Mayo myself, I'm personally very excited to hear more about the history of and current vision for ACRU. But before we discuss that, I'd like to ensure our listeners know more about each of you. Could you give us a quick snapshot of what you're doing currently and what your focus as a physician has been here at Mayo Clinic? Dr. Alberts, could we start with you?
Sure. Thanks, Dr. O'Sullivan. Definitely a pleasure to take part in this podcast today. I started my career at Mayo over 25 years ago now, and it's been a joy being here to take part in a lot of the activities related to clinical research, starting off as a fellow focused in GI cancers and being able to gradually develop my skills in conducting and developing clinical trials and ultimately helping lead some of the trial-related activities specifically for gastrointestinal cancers. Currently, my focus really has shifted to more supporting the structures and activities around clinical trials within the cancer center, and therefore not as much direct involvement in developing trials or leading trials.
And Dr. Buckner, what about you?
I'm an emeritus staff member in the Department of Oncology and currently a certified executive coach working with Mayo Clinic leaders across the enterprise. Previously, my interests were in the development of clinical trials, translational research, and quality of life research related to patients with central nervous system malignancies, and one of the founders of ACRU.
And Dr. Laprinzi, last but by no means least.
So I'm a medical oncologist. I started Mayo at virtually the same time that Jan Buckner did back about 36 years ago. In clinical practice, I saw breast cancer primarily throughout my career. My primary research interest has been symptom control trials, which I define as trials aimed at trying to prevent and or treat and or better understand symptoms caused by cancer and or cancer treatment. So I remain involved with doing a lot of work in this area and look forward to further discussion here today.
So I'd like to hear more about the genesis of ACRU. I understand that it originated out of another entity. Which entity came first and why was it started? And then why did it morph into what we know today as the crew?
In my recollection, way back when things got started, and the date of this, Jan, give me the date when it started. 2003. So back then, we had the North Central Cancer Treatment Group, NCCTG, which Jan was chairing at that time. That it also had a CCOP grant associated with it, which took care of the cancer control trials, which I helped to chair that part of things. And the wisdom at the time was that NCI was not able to support all of the clinical trials that the cooperative group wanted to do. They had limited funds. Everybody always has limited funds. And so the thought was, let's develop another group as part similar to NCCTG. The NCCTG members, there were probably about 15 members or so at that time, could have been 20. And those members, we decided to let's develop another group that would facilitate studies that would be funded by other means other than the NCI cooperative group mechanism. Sometimes that would be pharmaceutical company means, and that we would be able to do studies that we couldn't do through the NCI funds. And so a group was started, MCCRC, Mayo Clinic Cancer Research Consortium. And with that, virtually all of the members of that group were members of NCCTG. There were a couple of members of NCCTG who decided not to participate in the MCCRC part of things. And then as things came along in cooperative groups, there was an interest from a group that looked at all the cooperative groups, and the NCI decided there are too many cooperative groups and we need to consolidate the groups. And therefore the NCCTG joined up with ACOSOG, American College of Surgical Oncology Group, and also with the CALGB, and became the alliance. And at that time, there was the thought that it would be nice to have the MCCRC around to help facilitate non-NCI supported studies. The alliance or the ACOSOG didn't have such a thing. And we decided to change the name to ACRU so that it wouldn't be quite so Mayo-centric, so that the other cooperative groups would have. And that's how we changed to ACRU, and things went on from there.
Well, as much as I enjoy correcting you, Charles, I can't really find anything I can correct to that comment, except to say it was in about 2011 that the NCI reduced from 10 groups down to 5, based on recommendations from an Institute of Medicine report. And what we felt was that NCI did not have the funds to support all the clinical trials for which we saw clinical need and for which there was more than adequate scientific justification. So we wanted to have a platform to make more studies available to patients that we thought were met an unmet need and for which there was strong scientific support. And the support for those trials could come from industry, from philanthropy, from other NCI mechanisms like R01s. So it was just a platform that already existed that we could leverage to bring about more studies for both diagnostic and therapeutic purposes.
And just say that, you know, as one looks back at the history of MCCRC, and particularly as it evolved into a CRU in 2011, during that five-year period that MCCRC had existed, it grew to 40 member institutions. It accrued almost 1,500 patients to a total of 27 protocols, 16 industry partners. So it really showed the power of that sort of entity and the desire to have a structure that provided an outlet for investigators where there weren't opportunities, be it through the cooperative group system or other mechanisms that existed at that point.
Can you elaborate a bit on what need ACRU met in the area of oncology translational research?
I think it follows up on our previous conversation that it was at a time in which oncology therapeutics were just bursting at the seams. There were many more targeted therapies that were available, combinations of targeted therapies, and there simply was not enough funding from NCI to do the job. So the idea was to enhance the opportunities for patients to participate in promising therapies that would not have been available otherwise. It gave opportunities for investigators to have a platform in which they could actually do clinical trials that wouldn't have been possible by any other means, and supported the institutions that were participating by providing clinical trial availability to patients that came to their institutions in order to provide a more complete menu of studies to the patients.
And obviously, I'm hearing just so much here about innovation and new opportunities. How did the focus on innovative research become core to the mission of the ACRU?
I think it was baked into the initial concept that this was an opportunity to fill niches that were not being met either by the NCI cooperative group mechanism or by industry, particularly in areas for which it was the studies would not necessarily be part of a registration strategy for industry, but there was a clear clinical need, there was a clear rationale for the study, and gave opportunity to folks with illnesses that may have been overlooked by either industry or larger clinical trials funded through NCI.
And just speaking from my standpoint as having been a chair of the GI committee within North Central, there was such an enthusiasm to bring forward studies with the evolution of meaningful agents that were coming forward, better understanding of molecular pathways, yet limited opportunities, again, through NCI, through the cooperative groups, and certainly industry was much more focused at times on the registration-based studies. Therefore, MCCRC, and certainly has evolved to ACRU, provided that opportunity to take forward these novel studies and provide an outlet for a lot of investigators, including junior investigators who really didn't have an opportunity to work with an industry partner on a phase three trial. So, you know, a lot of value there in really trying to build out the translational earlier phase clinical trials that would help then advance the science toward those studies that would lead to registration.
Now I just add that I agree with both my colleagues. It basically allowed a platform for interested investigators to come to do trials. And they came up and said, well, what about this? And what about that? And we thought through things and had some flexibility to say, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So I don't know that when we first start off, we figured out that's what was going to happen. But by allowing it to happen and allowing investigators to come by and listening, things evolved and that's what happened.
I mean, I personally think that's a great thing about the ACRU. You know, it's unique three-way partnership among investigators, community doctors, and industry partners. Can you tell me a little bit more about why you believe community doctors are so critically important to the mission of the ACRU?
Way back when I was a fellow in earlier times, so we're talking a long time ago, the thought process was that clinical research needed to be done in university settings, that community doctors couldn't do this sort of work. Now, there was somebody that we all know, Dr. Chuck Mortel, who thought that's not necessarily correct. And he actually started the NCCGG as a project and said, let's try this out. We think community doctors can do this sort of work, and a lot of the patients are in the community. And in truth, when I was a fellow at the University of Wisconsin, I started off and I put patients on clinical trials and I did a lot of work, and the staff may not have been watching as close as you might think. And I learned it as I went there. But all the people in community practice had been through that process and had learned to put patients on clinical trials at the universities, because that's where most of the fellowship programs were. And so they had experience along that way. So that's the idea. And so when Chuck actually developed that problem, that program as an experiment, and people thought, golly, you're crazy, Chuck, you can't do this, demonstrated it. That started the CCOP program, Community College Oncology Program, and that is evolved. And to this day, and Steve and Jan can help me on this, I think that 80% of patients or so are put on by community doctors, not university doctors, for that setting. So that's how I think that came about.
As you think about it, number one, because the majority of patients are treated within the community, and the community oncologists are those that have access to those patients and serve patients across a broad spectrum of settings, from rural settings to inner city settings. So the diversity of patients that can come into trials by participating community oncologists more represents the general population. And presumably then the results then will be more reflective of what of who actually is receiving the therapies. From an expertise standpoint, folks in the community have a strong sense of logistic feasibility, what is going to work in terms of what patients will accept, but also just the logistics of what can kill trials. So having community oncologists reviewing the studies, particularly eligibility criteria, is crucial to the actual success of the trial itself.
The engagement of our colleagues in a community setting is so critical, not only for the feasibility of something moving forward, but we all recognize how long it takes to move a drug from its entry into initial trials to actually being approved for use. The best way to get beyond that is ensure that there's a broad-based system that allows rapid accrual to clinical trials so that we can quickly evaluate the benefits of a drug, and if it shows true benefit, to be able to move it into the clinic setting, hopefully in a much more rapid way than we do today.
I think it really highlights how it's crucial for us to be involved with our community oncology partners to ensure diversity in clinical trials. It's a great way of getting a more representative study population. And kind of shifting gears a little bit now, can you all, having worked in the field for a long time, give me your perspective on some of the challenges that you think are facing investigators currently who want to conduct innovative research in oncology?
It's the cost and complexity of conducting trials. And as we live in a world that certainly becoming progressively more expensive to conduct clinical care we provide to our patients, it makes it more challenging to support the infrastructure to conduct clinical trials, trying to find better ways to streamline that activity, to enhance the systems that we use that make it more feasible for our patients to participate. I think there are a lot of barriers right now that we need to work on, to focus on, to really enhance the ability to conduct clinical trials. Fortunately, in a world that's becoming progressively more virtual electronic, there are a lot of novel approaches that are being brought forward that should make it more feasible, particularly for populations that have typically not have access to clinical trials or sometimes even to high-level cancer care. This is definitely a point at which we have an opportunity through groups like Accrue to really move forward and develop really new approaches to providing access to cancer clinical trials.
When I started in this business 35 years ago, it was a whole lot easier to write a clinical trial and get it through the processes. It has become incredibly complex and lots of review processes and lots of things, even with electronic environment, which helps something. But it's just it's incredible how much more complex it has been. Are the clinical trials now a whole lot better than they were back then? I think we could argue about that a bit, but it is a statement that it's a much more difficult to get through approved by NCI and through other companies and other, that process than it was way back when we started. Jan, you agree?
Well, I do. I mean, it really boils down to sponsorship. Who is going to work with an investigator to bring a trial forward? So Accrue is one more avenue for sponsorship of promising ideas.
So kind of looking to the future, over the next decade or so, how do you envisage that ACRU may evolve or change? And what potential opportunities could ACRU provide for trainees and junior faculty interested in clinical trial development?
ACRU certainly continues to evolve in the membership and the ability to expand opportunities, certainly for the academic institutions that are involved and people in training at those academic institutions to take part. But importantly, getting back to kind of the founding principles of MCCRC and ACRU, it helps those who are entering into this point in their career and their training to understand the necessary partnership with the community to be able to move forward studies. But also from the clinical setting in the community, it helps continue to engage people who maybe haven't had as much experience in their training or opportunities there to be part of the process and really feel that they are contributing to be able to help formulate the studies that move forward, how studies are conducted, provide feedback, and then certainly provide state-of-the-art care to their patients.
ACRU is going through a process that cooperative groups went through a long time ago, and that is, instead of just thinking of studies in general, they are actually looking at, let's get a gastrointestinal group of physicians from the clinic and from academic institutions together to think about GI studies particularly. Same thing for breast cancer, same thing for other types of cancers and cancer control efforts. So there is more and more of that effort to try to focus that, making sure that there is intimate input from the academic university setting and from the community practice setting, because both are incredibly important.
We like to end our podcast with a more personal question. So I'd like to ask you all, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your oncology career? And what advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue a career similar to yours?
Well, there are plenty of mistakes along the way. I guess the one thing that I would really encourage junior investigators is to become immersed in the biology of the disease or symptom complex under study, because that really is going to be the source of most ideas coming forward that are likely to advance the field.
When I'm talking with younger investigators and whatnot, it's important. Talk is important and discussion is important, but putting things down in paper is incredibly important. Get it down in paper so then you can communicate that way. You can, with the editing processes that are available, track changes. You can understand what people are changing. So you got to get things down in paper so that you do that. My own self, if I'm thinking about, hey, I need to do it for myself because I'm going to forget it in 2 or 3 days. And I say, well, what? Let me go back to that thing. So it's things down in paper, as opposed to people can talk and talk and talk and meet and talk and never get in paper. And all on paper is electronic these days too, but get down in a manuscript or other document.
When you come in as a junior investigator, there's that intense enthusiasm that we're on the verge of curing cancer and trying to move things forward and recognizing that we all hope that there are meaningful and rapid advances, but it is a marathon, not a sprint. And as importantly, it's also a team effort, working with our colleagues in the lab, our colleagues in the community, our colleagues across other academic institutions, and really trying to advance the science and understanding. And at the same time, recognizing what patients want and certainly representing their needs. Just helping our junior staff focus their enthusiasm and energy in productive ways and helping them advance their careers critical.
This has been a really interesting discussion, and thank you all so much for joining me, and thank you to our listeners.